Welcome to Chronic Combat Conversations, a live look at our best bets, picks, and props for UFC 258 with your hosts, TB Scouting MMA and
the MMA Guru. And we've got a special guest here today. You may have seen him. You may already follow him. He's had his posts, his bets propped up on UFC pay-per-views multiple different times. He's a winner. We've got the UFC Shark in the building. Shark, how's it going, man?
Great. How you guys doing? Thanks for having me.
Oh, man, it's so great to have you on.
Never better, really. You are our first guest. You are the inaugural guest to Chronic Combat Conversation. So it is an honor for us to have you, truly.
Me too. Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, well.
Absolutely.
Hey, so let's just get right down to business. Headlining the card, Kamaru Usman versus Gilbert Burns. I know you guys are going to have some thoughts about this one. I can't wait to get into it, but as we always do, we start at the bottom where, you know, when you're opening up fight night and you're getting ready to watch all the fights here, you know, we don't start with Usman versus Burns. We start with Jillian Robertson versus Miranda Maverick. And, you know, that's where we're going to start today. Robertson, right now at plus 115, Miranda Maverick at minus 143. That line's been closing, and it seems like it's going to be a great fight to me.
It's definitely a good one to start off the card. Maverick came out, had one of the most impressive debuts out of any fighter last year, and I do say that, and I mean it. I mean, she got the doctor stoppage in round one versus Leanna Joshua. I know a lot of people that are really high up on her. She's got she seems to be very well-rounded. She's very young. You really can't ignore those biceps. I mean, they are massive.
She is jacked.
I've seen bodybuilders with smaller biceps than Miranda Maverick. She's fighting Jillian Robertson, who's coming off a loss. She kind of got whopped by Talia Santos in a fight that I didn't necessarily see coming. Talia Santos now kind of looks like a world beater at this stage. After that solid win. But Jillian Robertson, to me, seems like somebody that just is just churning out fights. And I don't know, is she just in it for a paycheck? Does she really think that she can win this fight? I'm not really sure the strategic behind any of her, what she's
it's
really
It's interesting
doing.
To me because a lot of people are talking about, Maverick having the advantage in the stand-up, which she certainly does. And, you know, to me, I also see that she was on the varsity wrestling team in high school, and they don't have a women's wrestling team. So she was out there wrestling with the guys, and, you could tell from her physique, she's able to handle herself in there. And I'm not so sure that, she's going to be at a disadvantage with the size. While she gives up, an inch and a half in height, Robertson at 5'5", Maverick at 5'3.5". She has the reach advantage at 65 inches, where Robertson is only at 63. Maverick, a little bit younger, 23 years old, Robertson at 25. And to me, this could be a showcase for the young prospect Maverick, where Robertson, maybe a little bit of the luster has come off of her star at this point. Looking over at the line once again, we're seeing that Robertson's coming in as the dog, as she's been a favorite, almost every single fight from my memory. Is there anything that you saw specifically in the lines here, Shark?
Yeah, well, all right. First thing I want to say is, Guru said, what's Robertson fighting for? A paycheck? And I want to say, yes. That's one thing. All fighters, they're there for a paycheck. That's their bread and butter. They're training their whole lives, dedicating everything, Yeah, she's there for a paycheck for sure. Women's MMA, I feel like the stronger woman usually wins. That's my opinion. I feel like the stronger woman usually wins all the time, and the Maverick just seems stronger. Definitely going to take Miranda Maverick in this fight. So the line, I think the line opened up. Miranda Maverick was less of a favorite, right? Was she of a favorite? I can't remember. I have so many numbers in my head. So, all right. So the way I pick my fights is I basically base it off. I have this system that I use with line movement, right? And it usually works. When I go against it, I fucking lose. Can we curse?
Yeah, go for it, man. Yeah.
So I fucking lose when I go against it, when I'm not familiar with a line and I'm like, oh, I like this fighter anyway. You know, I usually lose. The only, there's on occasion, this line system did not work for me. And it was with Spike Carlisle and Bill Algeo.
Okay.
There's a few occasions, and you know what? And I'm still learning it. I've only been doing it for like less than a year, you know? And the thing about me is, I'm a gambler. I'm a bettor. And UFC is just like something I like. And I found a niche in this. And so anyway, let's talk about the line movement.
Yeah, that's great. It's good to get an introduction to kind of what you're looking at.
People want to know who you are.
Yeah, I mean that's what I base it on a lot. All right, so Miranda Maverick is now more of a favorite, and I've seen this line before. I actually saw it. The guy who he trained with Mayweather on the TMT.
Muradov.
Yes, it was the same line, and Muradov actually went up to more as a favorite. So I think Amanda Maverick in the next few days is going to go up to more of a favorite. So, if, you know, for me, I wait till the end because I bet big money. I actually think I'm one of the biggest UFC bettors in the country consistently. The last year, I've been betting fights anywhere. I've put anywhere from $1,000 to $25,000 on fights and parlays, and I do it consistently. I haven't seen anyone bet that much money, you know? Like right now, I have $20,000 in my DraftKings account because I won last week. And I'm gonna lay it all on this card. This is a tricky card, but
this is definitely a tricky card. I do personally, for me, I do like Maverick here. I think I like Maverick by decision plus 150. Seems to kind of be screaming at me. Otherwise, you know, Maverick minus 125 or whatever his money line is. Perfectly
yeah,
fine.
And you know, there's a possibility Maverick could get the finish on the feet, as we saw, you know, Robertson get overwhelmed by Barber, who we'll get to later on the card. You know, she's responded well against some veterans in Courtney Casey getting the submission, and Froda and Macedo and McCann. So she's definitely got some big names on her record, but the losses to Barber and as we spoke about Talia Santos did not leave a good taste in our mouths. So sounds like I'll be going with Maverick here for my pick. Guru is doing the same, and Shark's jumping along too.
Swimming along.
Well, I think this fight does not go the distance. I think Maverick finishes her, but let's...
Okay. Really? Yeah, see, I get that feeling as well.
Listen, even on just even if you didn't even take a side, under 2.5 is plus 130. I've said this a few times. I often think they strategically pick what the first card fight of the night will be on the card, often because it'll be exciting. And often, so while I did kind of enjoy the juicy decision prop, I would be remiss to say that is a smart way to look at this fight, especially when it's going to be a close fight, however it plays out. So under 2.5 plus 130 is, I hate to be so wishy-washy, but it's really not a bad play.
Well, moving along, we have Gabe Green coming up against Phil Rowe. Green coming in at minus 137 right now, and Rowe sitting at plus 110. Green at 5'10", Philip Rowe at 6'3". So we're going to see a huge reach advantage here. 73 inches for Green and 80.5 inches for Rowe. And Rowe seems to be someone that likes to use his length only at times. It seems like sometimes guys can get inside of him. Something I saw on tape.
Pause. Whoa. Pause. You saw on tape that guys can get inside of him?
Sure.
Which tape have you been watching, man?
Well, what about you?
What tape that
what
is?
What are you seeing on the film? Because apparently I'm looking on the wrong website.
Yes, you were looking at the wrong website. What I saw really interesting, one thing you did point out, which will scare some people off, is that Rowe does have a huge reach advantage. You know who else had a huge reach advantage versus Gabe Green? Daniel Rodriguez, who's a tank. I mean, he is huge. And Philip Rowe is nowhere near the level of talent of Daniel Rodriguez. And Gabe Green came in on his UFC debut and fought Daniel Rodriguez on 6 days' notice and took him to task. In that third round, I mean, you see Daniel Rodriguez moving back. I mean, keep in mind, Daniel Rodriguez won a sound 30-27 decision. But on your UFC debut to come in on 6 days notice, I mean, he made D-Rod work for that win. And to me, that's really impressive. And he's taken some time off now. That fight was in May of 2020. And I think they're giving him a good chance to showcase his skills. That being said, Rowe is somebody who did not face a winning fighter until he came to Dana White's Contender Series when he fought Leon Shabazian, who had already been beaten by Gabe Green. I mean, talk about the salt. I mean, look at these guys' records that he fought. 4-5, 1-2, 0-3, 0-1, 1-1, 0-1. Yeah, so I just really salty record. Don't know if Rowe can get it done at all. Yep. So not laying any money on Rowe, that's right, for sure.
It seems like Green has more of a kicking arsenal and you know, likes to fight a little bit more on the outside when possible. And you know, he did show some good cardio, ability to get through the adversity like we talked about, but a little bit of a lack of elite skills. It seemed to be very hittable. So I, you know, Rowe has a little bit more of a reach advantage than Rodriguez did. And, you know, if this goes to the ground, we're looking at 6 submissions for Green and 4 submissions for Rowe in their career. And neither of them have ever lost by submission. But placing some bets, I wasn't so quick to pick a side here. I was able to jump a little early and get, you know, not to go to decision minus 158. It probably slid by now because I took that a couple of days ago. I did parlay it with another fight that's going to be coming up on the card. So we'll get to that later. But that's the first leg of a parlay for me. Is there a side or a prop that you had that you picked out?
First, I'll just say that I did think I liked Green money line. And that's pretty much it. I'm not really sure yet.
Okay. And Shark, what about you? Did you have any thoughts on the movement on the line in this fight and anyone you wanted to pick?
Yeah. So this fight is interesting because this fight, when the line opened, I loved it. And I loved it in Phillip Rowe's favor. And I said, who's Phillip Rowe? I've never seen the line lose before. This morning I woke up. For me, Phillip Rowe, the line, he's on a losing line. I'm definitely going to take Gabriel Green minus 137. I'm going to put that in a parlay, and I'm going to lay some wood on that. I'm confident in that pick in Gabriel Green minus 137. Far as any props, total rounds, it's going to go under. I thought this fight would last, but I think Gabriel Green finishes him.
Gabe Green by finish plus 200. So
under
that might not be too
much. Under 2.5. I'm not a huge prop person, mm-hmm. You know, but if I did, I'd do under 2.5 rounds. Gabe Green
minus 134.
Okay,
for that one.
Although
if I'm being honest, if you really do like Gabe Green, Gabe Green minus 137 under 2.5 minus 134. That's this. You know, you'd really have to decide which one you actually like better. Do you actually like Gabe Green better, or do you actually like the under better? Because that's the same. Gabe, you're not getting any edge.
Gabe Green, definitely. You know what? We were talking about this before. Shabazian almost finished Phillip Rowe the first minute of their fight.
Yes, with an uppercut.
And Gabe Green finished Shabazian the first round, I believe.
Yes.
I mean, you can't go by that, but I feel like on this level, maybe you can.
Yeah, there's a lot of inexperience, a lot of variables, and I'll be waiting for the weigh-ins. There's going to be a big size differential, so I'm a little up in the air on my pick. We'll see how that closes out. Let's get going to close out the early prelims here. We have Ricky Simone coming in at minus 250 and Brian Kelleher at plus 195. Ricky Simone matches up well in height. They're coming in even at 5'6", but Ricky Simone has a 3-inch reach advantage, equal leg reach. And Ricky Simone, the younger fighter by 6 years, 28 to Kelleher's 34. In their UFC careers, Simone 5-2, Kelleher 5-4, plenty of experience, plenty of tape to go off of. And, you know, I come away thinking that the favorite should get the win here, but what we like to do is watch these weigh-ins and face-offs, because a few weeks ago, if you remember, Ricky Simone fought at 135. This fight is going to be taking place at 145 because of a short, you know, turnaround. So how is Simone going to look on that scale? I know you'll be looking at it too.
Absolutely. Who wouldn't be looking at it? Ricky Simone, although he didn't necessarily look his greatest on the scale last time against Perillo, he ended the performance didn't necessarily show it. This time around, this fight's actually up 10 pounds, up at 145 at featherweight, where Simone's not necessarily as well-versed. I believe he does prefer to be the bigger fighter at bantamweight. So I think that's interesting. I think that he just fought. I mean, I know that he just fought 3 weeks ago. So while he didn't take much damage there, or really any, you know, he did just have a fist fight 3 weeks ago. So there has to be some level of wear and tear on that. You know, Boom Boom is dangerous. He's got that signature guillotine. He is not afraid to get punched in the face to land a couple punches himself. You know, it should be an interesting fight, but I do expect Simone to ragdoll, drag him out, do, you know, just rinse and repeat with the takedowns and just kind of wear on him with the wrestling. Right. I think by round three, she should be pretty much, the goose should be pretty much cooked. So my thought on this fight, and it's, some books offer it, make sure you look, Simone round three or decision -160. It's a round grouping. I'm going to be parlaying that actually. You can play it straight up at -160, but I'm going to parlay it with, Miranda Maverick, I think. You know, you parlay that with Miranda Maverick, her money line, +174. So,
yeah,
I like it.
Yeah, I'll be waiting to see what the weigh-ins look like, and from there,
that too,
Simone
for sure.
Decision is certainly looking interesting. I know it was minus money before, and that's kind of my worry jumping on that early. Because Kelleher, you know, 8 knockouts, 9 submissions, 7 guillotines. So if Simone's coming in with the wrestling pressure, leaves his head in a bad position. He did get caught by Rob Font a couple times in that guillotine grip, but was able to work himself out of the position. I'm curious if Kelleher has a little bit better of a grip on those. You know, he's a BJJ brown belt, whereas Simone is blue. That might give him a little bit of an edge, but as we've seen, wrestlers do work well against jiu-jitsu practitioners.
I don't know if you guys have seen, but these guys have just been jawing back at, even almost playfully, like respectfully, but like they were jawing back and forth at each other on social media, tried to get this fight booked a bunch of times. I don't think that this fight's just going to end really quickly. Like I think that they're, you know, especially on Brian's side, I think he's going to come out there and really try to fight. And try to make it go, which is why I really do like my round three or decision, because I think by round three, if the finish is there, it could be gotten because Boom Boom could be tired. Or, you know, again, the Simone decision, which I think is the most likely. Shark, how do you see it?
All right, so Kelleher, I think he's a live dog here. When it first opened, Ricky Simone was -278, I think, he was -275. To Kelleher was +207. And I loved Simone. I loved that line. I loved it. And I was all over Simone. He looked great his last fight, even though the guy was, you know, very low level competition for Simone. But now the line moved today. I'm talking about DraftKings lines. Ricky Simone -250, Kelleher +195. There was a fight last week and a few times I've seen that +195 win. Oh, I'll tell you when. When Impa Kasane fought Buckley.
Buckley was +195.
Impa was -259. I've seen that line win last week. Last week there was a dog that won +195 too. +195 is a live dog line.
And that turns up on the tape. Completely agree with you.
Turns up on the tape, 100%. Well said. You know, Brian Kelleher is absolutely a live dog. And that's why I'm not placing that parlay until I feel confident it weighs. And I might wait till fight day. I might wait till 10 minutes before, because it's all about that energy. You just kind of have to feel it sometimes. That's a really weird thing to say. I don't think any other cappers will ever say that to you. But a lot of times it's just about that feeling.
You're right. You got to see the weigh-ins. And to me, this fight, the way I look at it, is it's a pick 'em for me, just because I've seen both of those lines, the way it moved, both of them win. I don't know, it's a tough one, but I gun to my head, I'm going with Ricky Simon. You know, I just think he's like at this high right now, his confidence level's there. And if I had to choose, I would go with him.
And that's a good point. Sometimes when you're making a pick, that's different from what you're going to bet on a line.
But I'm not touching this fight. I'm not going to bet it.
Good point.
Right now, I'm not. But well, maybe.
See, that's the thing. It's about knowing what bets to stay away from just as much as what bets to play. And you know, something might be up here. So,
And listen, we record it on Thursday night. You know, a lot can happen between now and Saturday at 6 p.m. So, I mean, come on here.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. So let's move right along. We're getting started on our regular prelims. Andre Ewell coming in against Chris Gutierrez. Ewell at +130, Gutierrez -167. Where Ewell's going to have the 2-inch height advantage. He's going to come in with an absolutely crazy reach advantage. It looks like 9 inches, 76-67. And you know, that's going to be something that he's going to be trying to use to his advantage, sticking out the jab. And, you know, Gutierrez is a few years younger than Ewell, and he's shown to have a really good gas tank. And, you know, Ewell has shown to have not the best gas tank. So,
yeah, no, listen, what I've seen from Ewell, positive, long reach, and he's got the hand speed. You know, he's got some decent striking. He's got the good hand speed. I don't want to be mean. I'm really not an Andre Ewell fan. No gas tank really bothers me. Maybe it's just the Martinez win, the Jonathan Martinez win. I hate sounding like a hater. I like Jonathan Martinez. I thought he won that fight. After rewatching the fight, I still think Jonathan Martinez won that fight. he won his last fight over Erwin Rivera, and I mean, he won that fight by split decision again. And like, he has no gas tank, and like, when he doesn't get a finish, which is seeming to be never in the UFC, he just doesn't show any sense of urgency. Yeah, he has no finishes in the UFC.
Yeah, and he's been finished a few times.
He's 4-2 in the UFC. He has 3 split decision wins and 1 unanimous decision win. And he has 2 losses, 1 by KO to Marlon Vera and 1 by rear naked choke to Nathaniel Wood. I mean, just anytime he's fought somebody decent, he loses. And, you know, otherwise he wins by split decision. Like, what's the
point? I saw some issues as far as, you know, him being taken down and dealing with the grappling threats. Marlon Vera has sunk in this crazy, just wrapped right around him and scooped up the neck and then dragged him to the ground. It was one of the craziest takedowns I've seen, and straight into a submission attempt. So I think someone with a little bit of quickness like Gutierrez, and we've seen his leg kicks are absolutely devastating. So that one on Morales on the Woodley versus Burns card, you know, we saw that one during quarantine, and that was the first time we were really introduced to not having, you know, crowd noise during an event, and just hearing the whipping of that leg landing. Oh man, that was, he's so violent, and Ewell has such a wide stance. I'm not seeing good things as this fight goes deeper. I'll probably just playing the money line and maybe parlaying Gutierrez.
Well, listen, I was going to say, as we record here on Thursday night, there are no lines really available other than the money line. And I see total rounds on our local books here for FanDuel and DraftKings. So maybe then that's how you feel. Maybe you like the under 2.5 +164. But I got to be honest, Gutierrez is not much of a finisher either. And we've seen Andre Ewell's ability to last. So even though he has been finished, he was finished by Chito Vera and Nathaniel Wood, who are legitimate, like, top 20, top 15 guys. So I don't think Chris Gutierrez is that guy. I don't think Chris Gutierrez is a finisher. I like Gutierrez money line, I guess, -148. I'll certainly be, you know, picking him, circling him, no money related. Yeah, I mean, they have the juice over at -215. I mean, that should tell you what they think here. And I got to be honest, once they do release the props, and if you do think it's going to go to decision, why not throw a little, like, sprinkle on Ewell by decision? Because apparently, if he's there, he can win by split decision. you see anything on this shark? I my guess is if I know you, you're probably not putting this one anywhere.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm gonna bet this, but I agree with you. This fight, I think, does go to a decision. Andre Yu, I agree with you here too. I'm not a fan of him because that Jonathan Martinez fight. I thought he lost that fight. You know, I mean,
he did lose that fight,
but he really lost that fight. And I like
Andre Yu. I'll grab you a beer if you ever were to hear this, but you lost that fight, homie. Yeah, I'm sorry.
He knows that too, I'm sure. But Andre Yu will fight. He'll fight you to the end. He will fight for your money. He will fight till the end. He'll give it all he's got. I didn't see that fight with Marlon Vera, but I do want to see it. And Andre Yule has faced better competition, I think, than Chris Gutierrez.
To your point, dude, both of those finishes, both of them, Vera and Wood, came in the third round.
And they were both finishes, both of them, right?
Oh, no. One was a ground and pound finish by Vera, and then the choke was by Wood. But, I mean, dude, both round three... He really will fight for your money.
Yule did look good in his last fight, even though it was Erwin Rivera. He did look good, but
yeah, for the first two rounds,
he was so much bigger than him. You know what? If I had to pick, I would go with Gutierrez. I'd go to that. I'd bet this fight goes to a decision. It goes the distance.
It might go to split decision. Seriously, if your book offers that, throw like I don't know 50 cents. Throw a dollar. Throw a couple, throw your lunch money on a split decision if they somehow offer that prop, because that would be crazy. But I think we should move along to fights with props on them at the moment.
So Pollyanna Viana, next fight coming in against Mallory Martin. Viana at +125 and Martin at -155, and Viana is going to be giving up 1 inch in the height. She's at 5'3", where Martin's at 5'4". However, she'll come in with a 4-inch reach advantage, something she's used to in most of her fights. 67-inch reach versus Mallory Martin, 63. Martin, a couple of years younger, 26 years old, compared to Pollyanna Viana's 28. And we're looking at a couple women that have a lot of submissions on their record. Viana, 2 submission wins, 1 submission loss. However, 3 decision losses as well. And Martin, 1 submission win, 1 submission loss in her UFC career. One thing I noticed, and we did talk about Mallory Martin, Elevation Fight Team, but I also saw on her track record that she had worked with Singano BJJ and Tiger Muay Thai. Whereas Pollyanna Viana is coming out of Tata Fight Team. This might just be a levels type of fight where, you know, I think Martin faced a lot better fighter in Janji Roba than anything that Viana's seen. And, you know, Martin has a little bit more of a wrestling in her background, and Viana, you know, will give up some bad positions. So both women like to see, the fight end inside the distance, but this one might go all the way.
Yeah, I certainly think it will. I'll just tell you straight up. I have Mallory Martin by decision +115 here. Viana is, to me, again, respectfully, pretty much the lowest level there is currently in the UFC. She has her one win recently over Emily Whitman with a round one armbar where she got taken down and somehow came away with the submission that, you know, probably generally shouldn't happen. You know, she's lost to Hannah Cyphers, Macedo, JJ Aldrich, you know, not again. There's just nothing impressive here. I would feel if you cash your Poly ticket at +140 this weekend, literally like power to you. But there is no way I'm risking money on Poly here. It's just, she's just not very good. That being said, you look at Mallory Martin, like you said, with levels. I mean, she lost to Macy Barber in 2017 when they were like both one of their first fights. And then she lost to Jan Darobi by sub, who's a, you know, world-class jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, well, she did a great job, you know, fighting off the submissions in the first round to make it all the way to the second.
Right. So where I am actually concerned with Mallory is how she did get lit up by Hannah Cyphers in that first round of that August card in 2020. She got lit up in that first round. I was really nervous because I had bet Molly by finish, and she just got beat up the whole round, and then she came out in the second round and got the rear naked choke early. That being said, is Polly going to be the one to punish her on the feet? I honestly think that Hannah Cyphers is a better striker than Polly, and I not only think that, but I know it. I mean, Hannah Cyphers beat Polly at a previous time, so I just don't see it. What do you guys see? What about you, Sean?
All right, so yesterday and the day before, I was going to lock in Pollyanna because of the line. I love the line for Pollyanna Viana, and I was like, I don't know how she's going to win, but right now I have her winning. And now today the line moved. Mallory Martin is minus 155. Pollyanna Viana is plus 125. So in the last, I don't know, year, I've never seen that plus 125 win against a minus 155. Never. And I have this shit memorized so good in my head. The only time I've seen that line not win is when Donald Cerrone drew against Nico Price on that line. That was the only time I saw that line not win for the minus 155. For me, Mallory Martin I hate using this word, but it's a lock, bro.
Mallory Martin, a lock.
I don't see her losing. I'm gonna put that in another parlay. I'm not gonna put it in my strongest parlay, but I'm definitely gonna use Mallory Martin in a parlay. Like over under, I don't even know. I don't even care to look at it because there's only so much I can, you know, so much shit I can
handle.
Definitely. I was listening to a YouTube thing earlier. This is what I heard them saying. Oh, a lot of these fights are gonna go the distance. I feel the complete opposite. I feel like on this card, a lot of fights are not going to go the distance. And I think this one, Pollyanna Viana and Mallory Martin, I don't think it's going the distance. And I think Mallory Martin a lot here.
Okay.
Mallory Martin by sub plus 850. Mallory Martin by KO plus 950. So talk about cashing if you can figure that out, right? I mean, if you can, how about double chance. KO or submission plus 470 for Mallory Martin. So, I mean, if you really like that, I mean, that's some cheddar right there.
Should we move on to Belal Muhammad? Or is any...
Please and thank you.
Yeah. So, let's do it. We got our next fight here. Belal Muhammad fighting Diego Lima. Muhammad giving up, you know, a decent amount of height and reach here. It looks like 3 inches in both. And, he is 1 year more experienced, but I think the biggest thing that we talked about in the last fight was levels, and we're going to come back and revisit that this fight, because when you look at the level of competition that Muhammad has faced in his career, it's just much higher than anything that Lima has faced. And some of the guys that Lima has faced that maybe touched that surface level, he's lost to and by finish in the first round. Lee, John Leong, round one knockout. Tim Means, round one knockout. I know that was a little bit ago, but, you know, this is someone that hasn't fought since October of 2019. So coming off a long layoff and coming in against a guy that is just so experienced in wrestling, his stand-up is really improving, and Belal Muhammad just looks like he needs to be in your parlay this week for me.
Yeah, I agree. At first, I was a little uncertain, and I didn't want to touch the fight for some reason, and it was because of the line. And then the line moved, and then I'm like, no, Belal Muhammad is a lock. I've never seen this line lose before. Well, let me double-check before I say that, but I agree with you. There is levels, and I didn't even realize this. Belal Muhammad hasn't lost a fight since 2019
versus Jeff Neal.
Oh, he lost against Jeff?
Yes. He actually went and trained with him. Loss.
Oh, they trained?
After that loss, right?
Yes. He went and trained with him and came back and beat, I think it looks like it was Takashi Sato and Lyman Good.
I love when fighters do that. Like, you can't beat them, join them. You kick my ass, and now we're homies. I'm going to come train with you. I don't know why. I love that. But, I mean, yeah, Belal Muhammad's only other two losses other than Jeff Neal are Vicente Luque and Alan Joban. Belal Muhammad's my pick all day long. Belal Muhammad by decision, minus 150. Belal Muhammad round 3 or decision, minus 175. I think they're great parlay pieces. Maybe a little too chalky to lay them straight up, but should happen. That's who I like.
I agree with you. I like Muhammad as well. I follow him on Instagram. You know, he's always
so funny.
He's in the gym all the time. I feel like he's always improving and learning. And I think he's on another level. And to be honest, I don't know. I'm going to tell you the truth. I don't know much about Diego Lima. I haven't really researched him because I was originally going to stay away from that fight because I didn't like that line. But now I'm going to look into it a little more, and I'm going to go with Muhammad.
Yeah, I mean, he's read his brother's coattails. I mean, Douglas Lima is the better fighter. His last two wins are split decision versus Court McGee and Luke Jamot. I don't hate to say that. I don't even know who Luke Jamot is.
Poor Luke Jamot.
Jumeo? I don't even know how to pronounce his name.
It's a great question.
And then he beat Chad LaPrize. Who's Chad LaPrize? Yeah. I don't know. That's the Ortega Holloway card. That was 3 wins ago. I don't. Who? Yeah. No. 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 No.
sounds like we're all on Muhammad and pretty heavy. Moving along to another that we might agree on here, Rodolfo Vieira -400, another big favorite, versus Anthony Hernandez at +300. And there is a gigantic gap in their abilities on the ground. Rodolfo Vieira, the black belt hunter, he can submit anybody. And, you know, he really proved it when you look at his background, ADCC submission wrestling championships, grappling world championships, Pan Am, European championships. This guy has been around all over the place, light heavyweight and heavyweight, now fighting at middleweight in the UFC. But can't help but get the feeling that you might be, you know, seeing things a little differently here than how the line might be playing out. And -400.
Listen, let me tell you straight up. I don't know what I'm seeing. -400, he's supposed to murder him. And I don't know that he does. You know, round one, like, he needs a round one submission. Vieira needs a round one submission, and I don't know that he gets it. Fluffy has good striking, not very good, but certainly better than Vieira, enough to keep him as a more well-rounded fighter than Vieira. Vieira's striking is basically non-existent. If he gets out of the first round, I don't know. Hernandez could get it done. I've seen Hernandez get hurt to the body multiple times. It seems to be a theme throughout his fights. One thing that I did think that was interesting, Kevin Holland, that was his first win. Had started his big streak in May 2020. Fluffy was a slight favorite in that fight, and he hasn't fought since. So you go from a slight favorite over Kevin Holland to a +320 underdog to a guy that literally cannot strike, and got his eye completely swollen shut against Saparov, who's no longer with the promotion. I don't know. For me, it's pretty much a pass in all capacities. Listen, you want to play Fluffy by finish at +350, go for it. Maybe you like Vieira to like somehow weather round one and then like just go balls to the wall round two, get a round two submission or round two finish, whatever, +430. So Vieira round two +430. Even Vieira round one is like -115 or something. It's like, it's stupid. There is no smart way to play this fight. So why do it? Just watch. What do you guys see?
All right. This fight, this is what I see in this fight from the lines. It doesn't go the distance. And Rodolfo Vieira wins. If you look at Anthony Hernandez, his record, Jordan Wright, he beat him in the first round. Jordan Wright's pretty tough. That was in 2018. He beat him in the first round, but it's a no contest. I don't know why. Does anyone
Marijuana.
Know why?
Smoking weed.
Oh, okay.
Stay off the weed.
Stay off the weed.
Marcus Perez.
Yeah, that was
yeah, that's
the
a
body
bad loss.
shot into the submission attempt.
Yeah, body shot into the submission attempt, and he got hurt to the body by
Kevin Holland.
The next fight too.
Kevin Holland.
Thank you, Kevin Holland. Literally finished him by a body shot. So, thank you.
Yeah, the things that really were scary to me about Hernandez was that his stand up really doesn't seem to be at the level that it might threaten Vieira, because what he relies on are flurries and rushing forward, and he puts himself in grappling positions, and that might have worked against Park and Brandon Allen, but you can't let yourself get engulfed by Vieira and expect to come out victorious. He needs to maintain distance and strike well, but the smaller cage. I really do think Vieira wins. He's going to be, you know, my pick. I might avoid him in the parlay just because I think it's slightly steep for how relatively inexperienced he is at MMA overall. He's only 7-0, so you might figure the 31-year-old that transitioned over from, you know, the BJJ scene, he might catch his first defeat. I just don't think that Anthony Hernandez is specifically the guy to do it. Only a 2-inch reach advantage, whereas Safarov did have 6 inches. So he threw up that snapping front kick and was able to catch him in the eye. But it was a little fluky. So I once again, pick Vieira. But
how's Rodolfo Vieira's cardio? That's a question, because I see a lot of these jiu-jitsu. Wait, what'd you say?
Suspect.
Is it? Because a lot of these guys.
I think so. Why not? He hasn't gotten a decision.
A lot.
He hasn't. Why?
Jiu-jitsu guys have their that are coming into the UFC, or, you know, any MMA when they're coming out of jiu-jitsu into MMA. I feel like they sometimes have cardio issues. I'll give you an example. Bellator, a few months ago, there was one of the Gracies. Do you remember that fight? He fought.
Yes. Oh my god, what was that?
Robson.
Yeah. Oh my god. -500 favorite. He was a loser in a minute whatever.
He ran out of gas. He was huffing and puffing. He just, you know. So
to your point, he's built like a brick shit house. He doesn't have the cardio. He's been to past the second round one time against Oscar Pachota. I mean, to the second round, one time with Pachota. Otherwise, he's pretty much a first-round fighter. Shooto Brazil 74, 2017, he got the finish in the third round. His wins, he's 7-0, 100% of his wins are by finish.
You know,
so it has to be a finish.
You know something, though? Yeah, like you said, you're right. It has to be a finish. Hernandez, his fights never go past the second round either. One time against Brendan Allen, and he went to a decision in 2018.
Vieira round two plus 430, Fluffy by finish plus 350. I think either are fine. I'll be circling Vieira. You guys ready to move on? I think we touched
yeah.
it.
Now kicking off the main card, we have Mackie Pitolo plus 145 against Julian Marquez at minus 177.
The Cuban Missile Crisis. You listen, when you introduce these guys have the two of the best nicknames in all of the UFC. You better say their nicknames. This is Coconut Bombs versus the Cuban Missile Crisis. That is the only way I want to hear this fight broken down.
Hey, it's all about the entertainment, because these guys are really going to bring the show. I'm counting on a stand and bang fight. Neither of these guys should be looking to shoot for takedowns early. I think Pitolo fighting for his UFC career, Julian Marquez coming back off a long layoff off of a devastating injury with a fully torn lat. And, you know, someone that got told, you know, we hear this plenty, but you'll never fight again. Well, these guys are crazy. He's going to get back in there. And it's awesome that he is. And he had a fight canceled against our buddy Safarov, which we were talking about, and I don't think he ever weighed in. So this is going to be the first time we get to see him weigh in, coming back off a few years from the injury break. Mackie Pitolo, you know, moved up a weight class, going up to 185. And then here we have Marquez, who is huge for the division and could probably fight at 205 in the future. So right here, this is going to close out my inside the distance parlay from earlier. And you know, I feel like I was able to catch it at pretty decent odds and put it together for plus money at plus 160 altogether when you put it with the parlay before with Rowe and Green. You know, I'm having a little bit of trouble picking a side given some of the intangibles. I'm hoping you guys can maybe give me a hand before we get to the weigh-ins.
Unfortunately, I can't give you much help. I'm really very, very all over the place. I think Pitolo has the better technical striking, while I think Marquez is the better power puncher. Marquez is a brawler. I think he's gotten rocked in pretty much all of his fights. But he's like, he really likes to bully his opponents. He pushes the pace. He's very tough. He's got good, decent footwork. He's pretty all around where he does feel comfortable. He's not afraid to be on the ground or anything like that. Pitolo, quick in and out, you know, decent footwork. Sometimes I feel he can be a little hesitant to pull the trigger. He can struggle to get inside. I could even sometimes question his fight IQ. And maybe Chinny, but I believe that would be more welterweight than so maybe that's more has to do with the weight cut. I'm really, really waiting to see this fight weigh in and face offs. I believe circle wise, I'll be circling Marquez. Bet wise, like I said, I think I'm holding off. Marquez by finish plus 155 is not a terrible choice. This has been super chalky for me after a very, very dog filled card last week. So I don't want to sit here and say Pitolo doesn't have a chance.
He definitely does have a chance, like you're saying. And, you know, one of the things that I was noticing is that Marquez is quick to scoop up the neck and also threatens Kimura's on takedown. So say Pitolo gets a little wobbled or doesn't like what he's dealing with in the stand-up, like against Darren Stewart, shoots for a takedown, he's not very good with positional awareness and fighting the hands on submission attempts. So, you know, maybe I do end up leaning Marquez here at that minus 177. I probably won't parlay it. Like I said, I have that prop for the inside the distance. However, seeing Marquez plus 950 for submission, I did put a little quarter unit play on that right now because I think that there's definitely a lot of value to be had in a guy that, you know, could definitely find a submission here.
Chark, anything?
Yeah. So this fight, this is a tricky fight. Julian Marquez, it reminds me of the Ponzinibbio a little bit. Long layoff. His past record is pretty good. You look at Julian Marquez, you're like, wow, this guy's good. He beat a lot of good people. Darren Stewart, Philip Hawes. I mean, you know, he has some good wins. And so, like you guys, I'm sure do this too, follow the fighters on Instagram. So Julian Marquez, I follow him on Instagram, see what he's doing. I see him grappling, wrestling, and working on that type of game. Also, he's with James Krause. I feel like that they're very strategic there. So if I had to bet this fight, I would take Julian Marquez. But I don't know. I just feel like you don't know what you're going to get. This guy hasn't
– You can't.
He hasn't fought in a while. And the doctor told him, you're not going to fight again. You shouldn't fight again. He doesn't have to listen to the doctor. What else is he going to do? He's going to train people and make, you know,
No, he has an unbelievable podcast with Kendra Lust. I know you know who Kendra Lust is.
No, I don't.
He like, yeah, you do. You know who she is.
I don't, but I guess she's a nice chick.
Yeah, something like that. But anyway, she's quite popular and they have a popular podcast. So listen, I don't know that pays his bills in life or that, you know, fulfills him and more like fighting does. But I think that Marquez, you know, made those, you know, is going to come back after the injury. And, you know, he's going to, you know, try his best to look good here. I mean, what was the injury, TB? He had his rotator cuff tore off his shoulder.
Torn latissimus dorsi. So it attaches to the scapula in the back. And
say it to me like I'm five. What happened? His arm fell off? Like,
yeah, no, it's basically, you know, when you're doing those pull downs at the gym with the bar over your head, it's like that.
No, I don't go.
Well, anyways, the muscle that runs up and down your back that helps you with standing up straight and a lot of your punches and your striking, you know, that's going to make it a little more difficult because he had to relearn a lot of those movements and, you know, it, like we said, working with James Krause, that's a lot of experience there, and on paper he should win. And it seems like we all are picking Marquez should he look good at the weigh-ins. So let's
I mean, I'm staying away from this fight. I feel like Pitolo has a chance. And like I said, these guys that are fighting for their jobs, I mean, a lot of fighters recently that have been fighting for their jobs been doing pretty well, except like guys that can't win, like Martin Day and Jerome Rivera, like that. But Mackie Pitolo, honestly, he doesn't impress me, you know? But
no, he doesn't. He's not impressive. But yeah, it's an interesting point. He lost to Darren Stewart and Impa Kasanganai in his last two fights. So three losses in a row, maybe he could be looking out of a job.
Certainly seems so.
I'm not going to put Julian Marquez in a parlay.
I don't know about that.
I'm going to enjoy. I want to win money. I need a win, you know, and I'm not super confident. But gun on my head, I would go with Julian Marquez. I think he finds a way to win. But I think
I got some extra money this week. I don't mind paying the bookies. It's cool.
I mean, I'm looking at Mackie Pitolo's record again, and I don't know. It's not really impressive, you know.
Definitely not. Jim Miller coming in as +210 underdog to Bobby Green, -265. And I think I can speak for all of us when I say we have some bad memories betting on Bobby Green.
What memories? I don't even know what you're talking about. Oh, no. Sorry, I may have erased my memory.
Good old Jameson, God. Right?
Awful. Yeah, completely. But, the mind erased.
Yeah, Jim Miller, 4 years older at 38. He's given up 2 inches of height. He does have a 1-inch reach advantage. But, you know, I mean, Jim Miller, 21-14 in the UFC, and 10 of those wins are by submission. And that's really his only threat here against Bobby Green. Can he get the early finish, or does he gas out once more and just deal with the technical striker from the outside? Because Green has great takedown defense, and he's proven, you know, to be tough and not really get put out. He's only been submitted 2 times in his career, one all the way back. You know, going to 2010 was the last time we've seen him submitted, never in the UFC. He's only been knocked out once, and that was by Poirier back in 2016. And I can imagine, you know, he might have not been taking his training as seriously as he is now. He's looked as good as ever coming into weigh-ins. And while I might not trust him enough this time, given, you know, the past results, -265, it might end up looking like too short of a line if he cruises to a decision, easily striking and landing from the outside, because he's going to have a big advantage there.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more. The way he strikes with his hands down really, really frustrates me. It makes it really – he makes fights way closer than they need to be. Makes me not want to bet him at all. The line being where it is makes me not want to bet him at all. You know, really, really tough for me to bet him after that loss to Thiago Moises. That being said, the only way I could bet him is by decision. Where do I have that written? I believe I have it at -150. Is that what it is? Where is my notes? -150. And -125. I apologize, guys. -125 for Green. And then one thing I thought was interesting was Miller, his last four wins, are all four of them are by round one submission. So if you're feeling really crazy, round one submission by Miller is +1300. It's the only way he's going to win.
Yeah. And, you know, Bobby Green, I would say the one thing I learned, you know, for posterity's sake, is that you can't really trust him against a high level athlete. And, you know, I don't think he's going to have to deal with those same level of punishment from the leg kicks, from the kicks to the head, and, you know, from the overhand punches. You know, Miller, he's going to be facing more of a one-dimensional threat here. So I could definitely see him, you know, going on cruise control. Shark, do you see anything on the line?
All right. So I like Bobby Green. I was watching his interview today on MMA Junkie. And I was like, I like him, man. We even you know, when he fights, I like Bobby Green. A lot of people say, I'm hearing a lot of people say, oh, Bobby Green doesn't have a fight IQ. I disagree with that. They're like, I don't know why he tried to why he shot for takedowns against Thiago Moises. I know why. I had a lot of fucking money on that fight. I was like there with him. So
why did he shoot for takedowns? Tell me. He knew
he was losing the exchanges with his hands, and he was. He had no fucking answer for Thiago Moises with the hands. Thiago Moises was countering him. Everything he was throwing, he was countering and hitting him with hard shots.
So 100%.
He knew he was losing on the feet. So he said, listen, I got to go for takedowns. And that's why he shot for takedowns. Like, what the fuck else he was going to do? He fought for your money. Even though he lost a lot of money for us, he fought for the money, and he did. He tried his best to fucking win. He's like, shoot for a fucking takedown. I can't beat this guy with my hands. Let me shoot for a takedown. He did everything he could fucking do to win, and he just couldn't win. Thiago Moises was better that night. He improved a lot. And now I saw Thiago Moises has a fight coming up. I can't remember against who, but I do remember saying to myself, I'm fucking betting Thiago Moises. And this fight, I'm not taking Bobby Green. I'm not betting this fight. I'm just going to watch it. And I'm going to watch it, and I'm going to root for Bobby Green. And Jim Miller has never been finished, only, I think, by Donald Cerrone and someone else. Jim Miller's only been finished twice. So I don't think Bobby Green's going to finish him. I don't think Jim Miller's going to finish Bobby Green. I think this should go to distance.
Moving right along, top three fights.
Kelvin Gastelum, -225 against Ian Heinisch, +175. I'm a little bit surprised at the line here. Heinisch, you know, a little bit taller, 5'11", couple inch reach advantage. He's actually a couple of years older than Kelvin Gastelum, but you wouldn't know that in fight years, as Heinisch spent a good amount of time in jail due to some drug trafficking. So when he came back,
Cayman Island.
Yeah, I mean, he's been training. He was at Factory X. He went to Tiger Muay Thai, you know, the homeland, really work on those mechanics. And actually, I've been seeing Ian Heinisch seems to be doing some work at elevation. So he's been sitting down on his punches a little more. He had that nasty first round knockout of Mearshart, but hasn't, you know, really been able to get in there since. He took a couple substantial losses in a row to Derek Brunson and Omari Akhmedov, a couple guys that can really grapple with the best of them. And Kelvin Gastelum, while he might, you know, you might have him ranked higher than those two guys, I'm not actually sure his wrestling and top control is better. And I'm just not sure where he's at mentally, you know, dealing with, you know, some depression like he's talked about, but also just he looks hesitant when he's in there fighting, and it's just not a great sign for me. You know, it's for me, this is actually going to be one of my bigger plays on an underdog for this card. I'm looking Ian Heinisch. I already placed the unit on +194, and right now I'm seeing he's at +175.
Wow, that's some big movement. Yeah, listen, Heinisch is a good fighter. Before that Mearshart win, who again, Gerald Mearshart, you know, he's decent. He had lost to Brunson and Akhmedov, so he really needed that win versus Mearshart. He has not fought anybody to the level of competition of Kelvin Gastelum, which really becomes my biggest issue in pulling the trigger here, is I still continue to go back and forth in my own mind. The Jack Hermanson heel hook, terrible, terrible showing. But I don't like, believe me, I'm no MMA fighter, but like that shit just like happens in MMA. And you kind of just, I feel like you kind of have to chalk that one up, and like you just got to push forward. Like that didn't even happen. A split decision loss to Darren Till is not the end of the world. And that fight with Izzy was, we all know what that fight with Izzy was. So while it looked terrible that his last win was in May of 2018, a split decision win over Jacare, while that is terrible, I mean, he needs a win here. Ian Heinisch is significantly, you've said it a few times tonight, there are levels to this. Ian Heinisch is significantly not as good as the last. I mean, look at the last people he's fought. Jack Hermanson, Darren Till, Adesanya, Jacare Souza, and Michael Bisping. And then Chris Weidman. Like, I mean, where does Ian Heinisch fall on that scale? I think below all of them. So while, again, I am so nervous to put my money on Kelvin Gastelum, I don't know. And I would love to see a Heinisch win. He's a juicy underdog. So pay attention to my profile. I do not know how I'm circling. I hate to do that. I always have a forced lean. I don't know. I forced lean, I lean Gastelum, but I don't know.
It's a dog or pass here. What are you going to get? What Kelvin Gastelum are you going to get? And, you know, I know he needs a win. I'm sure he's focused and really training hard for this one. And he's fought way better competition than Ian Heinisch. But
the one that said that the guys that need the wins have been winning. That was your shit.
I know. But I like to look at it both ways, you know.
I think one of the things that you were talking about was more younger guys in the beginning of their career fighting for their career. Kelvin Gastelum is 10-6-1 in his UFC career. So this is someone that has already been to the bottom, been to the top, been back down to the bottom. And, you know, I'll toss it right back to you because I just wanted to put out that distinction.
Yeah, I mean, he's faced a lot of good fighters. I don't know. I'm personally not going to bet this fight. Ian Heinisch is younger in fighting years. Like you said, he was in jail and started his career later. You know, that reminds me of Bernard Hopkins in boxing. Bernard Hopkins fought till he was like 50 years old. He started his pro boxing career at a later age, at like, I don't know, maybe in his 30s or something. I don't know if that's exactly the exact age, but he started later. So Ian Heinisch is younger.
Yeah.
When they're in the cage, he's definitely younger. I don't know, man. I'm not betting this fight. I would do a dog or pass here. I just feel like it's too risky.
Yeah.
One thing I do think is that the fight, Mike, I think it goes to the decision. I don't think there's a finish.
That I think is a pretty sure bet. You have Gastelum has been to the decision 9 times in his UFC career, and Heinisch has been to the decision 4 out of 5 times. Where I see Heinisch having some success is, you know, being a little bit, you know, relentless as far as he's always going to be in the fight. He has a really good low calf kick that he's been working on, and Gastelum is heavy on his lead leg and eats leg kicks. That's going to hurt his movement, being the smaller guy. You know, I see Heinisch ducking and weaving into hooks. He's really starting to get his stand-up game together, working with these better teams as he keeps on moving with his camps. And, you know, to me, that it just stood out to me as the dog play of the card. You know, I know you guys see a lot of indecision going with Gastelum and all the experience that he has, but, you know, I hope you can understand where I'm coming from on it.
Oh, absolutely.
I wouldn't be surprised if Ian Heinisch wins. I won't be like, oh,
me neither.
God, I can't believe it. You know, but I even if Gastelum loses, I feel like, I don't know, the UFC still shouldn't cut him.
No, not yet.
They won't.
He's faced high level competition.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so I don't know. I think, I don't know. Honestly, I don't know. I'm not betting this fight, but I do like the over. Over 2.5 rounds. I like that line. And I could see a finish in round 3. Or
Gas.
I don't know who, but I can see that.
Gastelum by decision plus 110. Just going to throw that out there finally. Just last final thing I'll throw out before we move on.
Co-main event of the evening, Macy Barber plus 105 versus Alexa Grasso minus 127. Grasso, you know, coming in with a lot more UFC experience at 4-3. Barber 3-1. They match up in height 5'5" each. Grasso holds a 1-inch reach advantage, 66-65. Grasso 5 years older at 27, Barber 22. I know you guys have seen all the talk of her, you know, wanting to be the youngest champion in the UFC, and you know, things obviously went a little off the rails with the knee injury, torn ACL suffered against Roxanne Modafferi, and I remember cashing very nicely on that juicy underdog. So, in this fight, what stood out to me is, you know, the level of competition that each has faced and the boxing fundamentals of Grasso. So that -127 where it's sitting right now, the line keeps getting shorter and shorter. I'm just going to keep waiting. It seems like money keeps coming in on Barber. Where are you at?
I've been back and forth all week. Obviously, you and I converse quite a decent amount. I've done my own tape. The experience of Grasso and her, to me, elite boxing is kind of is what brings me on to her. Macy Barber is the future, could be the future. Sometime down the road, what is she? She's still only 21, 22 years old. You know, her best win is her win versus Jillian Robertson. That's her best win. She couldn't get it done versus Roxanne Modafferi. We know about Roxanne's complete lack of striking. You know, you've seen Macy just not she wasn't very successful in that fight. I mean, obviously the knee injury, you know, maybe changes things a little bit, but a lot of it. But you know, I what I saw for this fight is Grasso by decision +105. I think it goes the distance. You know, one of these chick fights will probably end within the distance. Let's just be real. I don't think if you like a finish in this fight, you have to like Barber. I don't think Grasso will get the finish. She hasn't gotten any finishes in the UFC.
Right. And so, you know, she's Alexa Grasso, her only three losses have come in the UFC, one submission and two decisions, and being submitted by Tatiana Suarez really isn't that embarrassing.
Not at all.
So the thing that stood out to me is in her last fight, her last loss at strawweight went against Carla Esparza. You know, she's losing the first couple of rounds. You know, she's doing all right in the stand-up, but Carla's takedown threats kind of mutes a little bit of the movement and ability for Grasso to let loose with high kicks and everything. So, you know, all of a sudden the third round comes around and she starts using those underhooks better to stuff some takedowns, but, you know, she gets on the mat and then, you know, it seems like, oh man, it's going to be 30-27. There it goes. Esparza gets the takedown. And Grasso just kind of starts wriggling into position, controlling the posture. And then she like looks down at Grasso, like just takes a breath, leans back, throws up the hips, gets into an arm bar. Esparza is all the way laid out. That arm is about to pop out. And somehow Esparza fights through, gets back into full guard. Then Grasso gets to her feet. And for the last 2 minutes of that fight is piecing Carla Esparza up. And she nearly drops her. She has her hurt. And, you know, it was a little concerning that she didn't have as much of the killer instinct that you would have liked to see. But I really don't think she wanted to get taken down again and was able to not get taken down again the rest of the fight. So, you know, I don't think that Grasso, someone that's never lost by knockout, is going to find that against Macy Barber. You know, she takes contact very well. Ji Young Kim landed a lot of punches with a 6-inch reach advantage and with a lot of power. And Grasso ate them, came forward, won that fight handily, 30-27, solid grappling, and actually landed some takedowns of her own. So to me, I just saw a lot of growth in Grasso recently, BJJ Purple Belt. So it's not that she hasn't had the reps in the gym. And I think that she's just faced a higher level of competition and has the boxing and the stand-up because Barber, while she has the power, I don't think she has the fundamentals and she doesn't take a punch well.
Shark, anything?
All right, so this is the way I see it. Tyler, you broke that down good, man, and it makes me second-guess my pick, but I have to stick with my pick, and it's going to be Barber. What I really love about that fight is the line. I like it a lot. And I think by tomorrow and tomorrow and Saturday, it's gonna change even more. I think
I think Barber could be a favorite by fight time.
It reminds me of Dariush and whoever he fought.
Diego Ojeda, yeah.
That's what this line is like to me. And you know, Carla Esparza, she's high level. She's good. She can take you down. And I'm surprised Grasso she only took her down 4 out of 11 times. That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's definitely improved defense than what she had shown earlier in her career.
So, you know, it's not going to be an easy fight. I think this fight goes to a decision, I would say, but I have Macy Barber winning.
Shark, just to supplement on that, FanDuel has Alexa Grasso by decision plus 105, which I believe I said was my favorite bet for this fight. Right now, DraftKings has it Alexa Grasso by decision minus 106. So that's a 10-point swing.
Mm-hmm.
That's huge to me. As I saw that while we're recording, I just hit Grasso by decision at plus money because I do think it goes to decision.
Yeah, I think that's a good bet. I think that's solid. When she fought Matafiri, when Barbara fought Matafiri, she got hurt in the first round.
Oh, yeah.
It was the first round she got hurt. She hurt.
Partially torn ACL or whatever it
is. Second round, I guess it got worse. And the doctor came in. And when the doctor came in, he looked at it and said, partial torn ACL, and walked out of the cage. And the commentators are saying, how did he know that? What's he like, a human X-ray? How did that doctor know that? What is he talking about? No one knew it was really that. And the thing about Macy Barber, she's a fucking warrior, man. She still fought. She still fought that whole fight. She was still trying to throw punches and bang with Matafiri. But Matafiri's tough, man. She's been around for a while. I mean, her last fight, you know, it didn't go.
She has no striking. She's a 33% striking average or something. She's like awful.
But guess who landed a couple of punches on her?
The first round of that fight, I don't think it was. I think Matafiri took it because she took her down and controlled her on the ground. And then when they second round, when they stood back up, her knee was messed up. She threw a jab, you know. I think her knee gave out, and that's what knocked her down. I don't know. I think somehow Barbara pulls it off. Maybe she's more improved. Maybe the line's going to change Saturday. But right now, I have Macy Barber plus 105 on DraftKings, and I'm gonna put that in a parlay pretty heavy. That's what I have right now, and I do like the over as well. I think they're both tough. I mean, Macy Barber, she finished Robertson in the first round. You know, she finished her.
We've seen Robertson as somebody that really struggles with any sort of forward pressure with the striking, which is kind of why we like Miranda Maverick, because anybody that puts any forward striking on her, like, she just doesn't really know what to do. She's just not a good enough striker. And, you know, I think Grasso's overall veteran experience chip should come through here. I mean, how is Macy Barber going to win? Like, truly, like, if you like decision, then I don't think you like Macy Barber, because Macy Barber doesn't win decisions. And the longer this fight goes, Grasso is not going to tire her out. Her pace is amazing. And Macy Barber's pace is less than stellar. The only thing Barber's has going for her is that she's 22 and obviously has all this time off. So she could have made unbelievable leaps and bounds. But that being said, but she's been recovering. She's been busy trying to get back to where she was. So I think this is a big learning experience for her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked if she lost, but I don't know. I just have to ride with her. I like her. I don't have a, you know, an expert breakdown on why. My breakdown is because of the line. And
a YouTube guy didn't tell you to bet it, did he?
Nah. And Macy Barber, she's not shit. If this was Jillian Robertson and that was the line, I would second guess it.
No, she's not shit. That's why she's co-main event against a girl like Alexa Grasso, who's fought Tatiana Suarez, who's fought Carla Esparza, who's fought Randa Markos. I mean, she's fought, you know, top 15 perennial fighters. Felice Herring at the time that she fought her. I mean,
yeah, Macy Barber, I'm saying she's not shit. I feel like she's going to hang in there, and I feel like she's got a chance to win, and I just love the line. I like it a lot. I got to ride it out. There was a fight real quick. There was a fight a few months back. It was Corey McKenna versus Hansen.
Yes.
And I took Corey McKenna in a parlay,
And fuck that fight.
And the reason why I took that was because of the line movement. I saw what the line was and I saw where it moved. And I was like, I have to take Corey McKenna. And I put a decent amount in a parlay and one really big in it. And Corey McKenna ended up winning. Now, did she really win? I don't know. I was surprised when they announced her as the winner. I thought Hansen won. But I don't know. That's just an example of why I'm so big on this, on the line movements and why I track them and things of that nature. But I'm taking Barber here. That's my pick.
All right.
Any guys, anything else?
No. Let's get to what we all came for. The main event of the evening. Kamaru Usman. Coming in, the line keeps on growing at minus 278, and Gilbert Burns at plus 220. This is going to be one hell of a championship fight. I think we're in for some excitement here. No matter what your feelings are about Usman and his fight style, you can't deny the ability that he brings into the cage. And, you know, I just can't help but feeling like we're going to see a little bit of a repeat of what we've seen, you know, in the past few of his fights and just utter domination. So
I don't want to sound, again, too chalky or following some sort of narrative, but no, I think that Usman is, you want to hear something crazy? I think Usman is the most dominant champion currently. In the UFC, I think he is the most dominant champion. I think he has shown himself as at a higher level than everybody he's defended his belt against, higher than anybody else that currently has a belt. I mean, he has looked leaps and bounds better than Jorge Masvidal, than Tyron Woodley, than Rafael dos Anjos, than Damian Maia. The only fight that was close was the Colby Covington fight, and that fight, you know, was one of the most exciting fights ever. I mean, that fight was epic to me.
Yes, I would love to see a rematch somewhere down the line. And, you know, Usman, he's going to have, once again, a 2-inch height advantage, a 5.5-inch, no, 6.5-inch reach advantage. So when you get into the stand-up here, you know, Burns is someone that's coming up from, you know, 155. He didn't want to keep on doing the weight cuts and he wanted to fight more consistently. And he really found a lot of success moving up to 170. My only thing is he's fighting against a guy now that probably should be fighting up at 185 and just has an elite skill to cut weight and get down to that 170 and just compete at such a larger mass than his opponents. And Kamaru Usman, let's not overlook, you know, we might talk about Gilbert Burns in his second degree black belt. You know, Kamaru Usman's got his own black belt and he's got the NCAA Division II wrestling championships. He took home a bronze in 2008, a silver in 2009, a gold in 2010. He got better every year, a 3-time All-American. He won the Ultimate Fighter. You know, what do we think is going to happen here?
I don't know why people like Gilbert Burns. I don't understand that. I mean, Gilbert Burns' best performance of his entire career came in his last fight against Tyron Woodley, where he landed a career-high 84 significant strikes on Tyron Woodley. Great. He had half the control time that Usman had against Woodley. And in Woodley's last four fights, he significantly outlanded more than 84 strikes. Where is Burns going to get this pace from? Where is Burns going to be able to stay on the feet from? Usman has 100% takedown defense. How is Burns getting him to the ground? Was he just going to climb his back? I don't see it. I don't get it. He's not going to play with him on the ground. If you hold him up against the cage, like you just watched him do all the memes about or jokes about holding Jorge Masvidal against the cage, you hold Gilbert Burns against the cage. What is Gilbert Burns going to do?
Well, we saw it on tape. You know, he got stuck against the cage. Against you know, multiple guys. We saw Tyron Woodley in the fifth round was actually able to turn him out, and then Gunnar Nelson. That's another one. They didn't really want to get into all the grappling, but yeah, that's definitely something that popped up. You know, and those guys are nowhere near as big as Usman.
Shark.
This is a tough one, man. Let me ask you guys a question. How good do you think Kobe Covington really is?
I really think he is the top. He is simply the top five welterweight. I mean, he's top three welterweight in the world. Who's a better welterweight than Kobe Covington?
You think he's like, let's say all time.
All time welterweights. Where Kobe Covington ranks in all time welterweights? No, that drops him a lot further. But where Kamaru Usman ranks in top welterweights, I mean, he's up there with GSP. In my mind, I mean, he's running, he's getting up there. There's so many welterweights, and again, in what way do we have them in legacy? You know what I mean?
Reason I ask that is because I look at Kobe Covington's record, I look at Usman's record, and I don't want to say I'm not impressed, but I'm not like, whoa. I'm not like, whoa. So that's why when I feel like maybe Gilbert Burns has a chance. Because I'm just not like, you know?
Dude, you want to be not wowed by a resume. Why don't you look at Gilbert Burns' resume, who got knocked out in round one by Dan Hooker? I mean, you want to talk about a not impressive resume? I mean, that's 2018. That's tough.
It wasn't 2018. He could have improved a lot. Even Charles Oliveira, look how much he's improved, for example.
From 31 to 34. You know, and he went from lightweight, obviously, there to welterweight. But, dude, you've seen Usman run through the best of the best. Again, let me run through his names again. He beat in his last fight, he beat Woodley. No, I'm sorry, he beat Masvidal in his last fight.
Masvidal was short notice.
6 days notice. And Masvidal is a journeyman. I love Masvidal, kind of, at least before his whole Trump ridiculousness. Masvidal is a decent fighter. He washed Masvidal. Beats Covington pretty soundly. I think if it was going to decision, it would have been 4-1, at the very most 3-2.
I agree. I thought he put on Covington. I thought he put him.
Woodley, I mean, in that Woodley fight, wasn't Woodley a favorite? Kamaru Usman was a +155 slight underdog to Woodley. Nobody was taking, I mean, some people were, but nobody I knew was taking Woodley. I mean, nobody I knew was taking Usman. Everybody was on Woodley. He washed Woodley. That's what started the tidal wave of Woodley being washed. He washed Rafael Dos Anjos in one of the most lopsided fights you're ever going to see. And Rafael Dos Anjos only fights killers. He washed Damian Maia, where, you know, people really struggled to beat Damian Maia. He beat Sean Strickland. Sean Strickland looks good. He beat Warley Alvarez. Warley Alvarez looks good, you know, recently. Both of them look good as of late. He beat Leon Edwards in 2015. We've been waiting to see Leon. Leon Scott, as they call him.
I'm looking for a reason. I am looking for a reason to like Gilbert Burns. And
I can't find one
either. I don't.
He has to get him with a sub early, and that's so crazy. Usman spends he's so dedicated to his craft. He's so hell-bent on being a champion. He says everything in the interviews you want to hear. He says the pain of losing outweighs the joy of winning, so I will not lose. I mean, that's what gives me chills.
Now, one thing I do like, it's just a crazy prop bet. Will it come in? It's a long shot, but I think it has a chance coming in. I like under 1.5 rounds. It's just something I see in this crazy system I have. Sometimes it works. Most of the time it works for me. I like under 1.5 rounds. I don't know how that's going to happen. I feel that if you just asked me without me looking at any of these numbers and the lines, if you just asked me, I would say, nah, this fight's going to go like 4 rounds at least. You know, last week there was a fight that everyone was on the under 1.5 rounds, that the fight wouldn't get out of the first round. And it was what's that kid's name? Justin James fight. He fought Smith. And for me, I saw that fight would go over 1.5 rounds. And every predictor, capper was saying, oh, the safe bet, this fight will go under 1.5 rounds for sure. But I saw that go over. I saw it going over 1.5. I see this fight. I don't know how the fuck it's going to happen, but I see this fight going under 1.5 rounds. I don't know.
Well, that certainly scares the shit out of me, because if it's going under 1.5 rounds, I would, if you told me that, like if you looked into a crystal ball and you couldn't tell me who won, but you could tell me it ends in under 1.5 rounds, I might have to like go rob a bank and put it on Gilbert Burns. That scares me. So, but I don't, you know.
Stuff can happen. What's her name? There was a woman's fight a few months ago. Jermaine Durandamy. Yes. And she submitted her. And everyone was like, what? Maybe Usman submits Burns. You know, you never know. And what's the thing about they were training partners? Daniel Cormier would say something about
that.
They know each other. So, you know, and Usman is saying, oh, he knows. And Burns is saying, oh, yeah, he knows. They're like both saying it, like, yeah, he knows who, you know, what's out, like who's going to win and what's up. And the other guy saying the same thing. So, I mean, what it like.
What's going to happen?
Well, I think to your point here, something that we heard in the interviews, you know, maybe it wasn't such a peaceful split from Sanford MMA for Usman. Sounds like something happened. You know, we don't know specifically what at this point. Everyone's kind of clamshelled up at that gym. No one's saying who won the sparring sessions, anything like that. Dan Levy already did their research and tried to find out for us, but it was unsuccessful. You know, basically what I come down to seeing here is that these guys actually might hold a little bit more of a grudge than we might be letting on to. There might be a little bit more of a reason why they're even matching up against each other in the first place. Like, if they were training together for so long and Burns knows he's a contender, why is he moving up to 170 with someone that he's been training with for so long? There might have been something brewing there longer than we could think about. And, you know, it's possible, because a lot of times you don't see teammates wanting to fight each other, and they seem pretty willing to get this fight booked. So to what you're saying about there possibly being an under, you know, we're hearing all this talk about Usman's so boring to watch fight. No one wants to watch Usman fight. Usman this, Usman that, you know, he's not going to sell pay-per-views. What if this guy comes out here and he's rocking Burns on the feet in the first round? What if Usman comes out here, starts landing takedowns, and starts hunting for the submission with his black belt? This guy's much stronger. You know, Burns has 5 necks now. I get that. He's starting to get thick, you know? But I don't think that that's going to be enough for the muscle that Usman's had almost his entire life here and just been building with his wrestling background. Because grappling off your back, grappling in a gi, very different than the high-level wrestling that Usman has displayed in his life. And you know, I just can't envision Burns getting a win. But, you know, the more that we get into the layers of some of the details and intricacies of this fight, maybe it's not out of the question that Usman can find an early finish. But, you know, for my money, you know, I'm playing Usman rounds 4 or 5 or decision. I do think he's going to play it out further at -115. I'll probably be dropping a couple of units there. And additionally, yeah. Usman just straight up in the money line on a parlay. I already put him with Grasso. That was 1 unit. So Alexa Grasso and Usman parlay together for your co-main and main event parlay from me. Then also, I'm parlaying out Usman with Israel Adesanya in his title fight against Jan Błachowicz. So we'll get to the breakdown on that one in future time. But I feel very good about the Usman side in this fight.
Yeah, it's hard not to, especially just it's straight up at money line. Kamaru Usman and over 2.5 -137. Listen, his last round one KO came in 2017 against Sergio Moraes. I don't know. I'm very excited. I'm so excited to see this fight. I do think Usman washes him. You know, yeah, he's just I think he's elite. You know, you asked me about legacy, and you know, is Usman, you know, is Colby one of the best, you know, fighters? You want to talk legacy? Legacy wise, elite wrestling has beaten elite grappling. That's legacy. We've seen that play out, that storybook play out, time and time again. And Usman has the elite wrestling, so I'm taking Usman. Shark, any final plays? Any parlay you want to give out?
You know, it's hard. I usually put mine in Saturday is when I finalize, because I do follow the lines. But right now, I don't see them moving much more. But I see, I do like Maverick. I like Gabriel Green, Mallory Martin, and Bilal Muhammad. I feel like that's a solid parlay right there. I don't see any of them losing. Gabriel Green, yeah, it is scary to put money, to put $5,000 on Gabriel Green. Yeah, I'm going to be nervous as fuck if I do that. But I don't see Philip Rowe winning. I see Philip Rowe. I've been following him on Instagram because I want to see what this guy's up to. And I just feel like he's in Vegas and I see what he's filming and, you know, and what he's, his stories. I feel like he's just happy to, I don't know, he's just happy to be there. And, you know,
so I hate happy to be there.
Maybe that works for him. I don't know. But, you know, I'm just looking at at some picks I have on DraftKings. I'm looking at, like, this would be a great parlay. Miranda Maverick, Gabriel Green, Mallory Martin, and Bilal Muhammad. I'm going to probably put that in. Gabriel Green is scary. I mean, Miranda Maverick is, you know, everything is scary when you're putting big money down. At the end, I'm like about to push the button and I'm like, oh, wait, you know.
No, it can be scary. So, you know, here on we really try to focus on long-term investment, long-term return investment here. Cause you know, for me, I'm somebody, I want to make sure I have money to bet next week. If I go bankrupt this week, I'll just be sad. So, all right. Seriously, I think that pretty much covers this awesome card. I want to thank our fantastic guest, the UFC Shark, for hanging out with us here today, for breaking down these fight with us. I really, really appreciate that. You can follow him on Instagram at UFC Shark, correct? At UFC Shark, he's the one and only. Anyone else posting that is faking. They're faking his bets. We've seen people try to pass off his bets as theirs before. So, you know, keep your eye out. You want to follow UFC Shark on Instagram. Please look out for us, Chronic Combat Conversations on YouTube, Chronic Combat Conversations on Instagram, Chronic Combat on Twitter. Please feel free to follow me. I am the _MMA Guru on Instagram, Twitter, Verdict, and Instagram. And please follow our lovely host, TB Scouting MMA, on Instagram, Twitter, Verdict, and Tapology. I am your co-host, the_MMA Guru. Thanks so much for tuning in for UFC 258, and have a great night.